Good evening and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. As we always say, our conversations include you. And if you'd like to join us anytime during the next hour, our phone number is 941-3689. If you call us from Oahu, that's the number to use. And from the neighbor islands, or if you're listening to the live stream, 877-941-3689. Few who were at the circus in Honolulu on an August day in 1994 will likely forget how the day ended. Tyke, the circus elephant, dead in the street. She had bolted from the Blaisdell Center through Kaka'ako after killing her trainer. 87 bullets and a lethal injection finished her off. But has the lesson of Tyke really ended? Despite 20 years of work by advocates, there's still no ban on performing animals, wild animals. A federal bill, the Traveling Exotic Animal Protection Act, died in the last Congress. Around the country, there are bans in various counties and cities in 22 states, but no state has yet to altogether ban performing animals. In Hawaii, that may be changing soon. The State Board of Agriculture will consider a rule change at a meeting next Tuesday. That would be a key step in making Hawaii the first state to outright ban circus animals. Governor Ige has also given his pledge to end their use. Tonight, we'll look at where bans on performing animals stand now and talk more about this with you. Again, our number is 941-3689 if you're on Oahu, and from anywhere else, 877-941-3689. Joining us tonight, Inga Gibson is the Hawaii Senior State Director of the Humane Society of the U.S. Her office is actively working to prohibit the use of wild animals in entertainment acts, the sale of ivory in Hawaii, and the aquarium pet trade in Hawaii's reefs. Clinical psychologist Tyler Ralston is here. He specializes in the treatment of trauma and anxieties and was deeply bothered by witnessing Tyke's rampage and death on the streets of Kaka'ako 20 years ago. He's been advocating for bans on performing animals ever since. And Stephen Moore is here. He is the producer, director, and executive producer of documentaries in the U.S., Britain, and Australia. His documentaries have received 4 Emmys and other awards. He co-produced and directed the award-winning feature documentary Tyke, Elephant Outlaw. The film has screened at a number of international film festivals and was sold to the BBC and other international broadcasters. It also recently won Best Documentary at the Portland Film Festival, and it will screen at HIFF this Saturday night. And, of course, you're here too. And again, if you want to join us, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Welcome to all of you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is a really tough story, any way you look at it. And for anybody who remembers that summer day and what happened, it will be an indelible memory forever. But beyond just taking that story and using it for some of the purposes that just outlined it in the opening there, this story has many levels. And when you watch the film, those levels begin to percolate. You begin to see that this is not a very one-dimensional narrative that has a very clear objective, let's ban animals, but really allows people to think more deeply about this. Stephen, as you began to think about doing this story, was that clearly your intent, not to make this some sort of bandwagon for a cause, but to be able just to tell a story?
My partner, Susan Lambert, and I think from the very beginning, decided we wanted to make a film about people's relationship to other species. And we were looking at other areas. We were looking at animal law stories in that area. And we came across the Tyke story, and we felt that embodied so much of what we were attempting to look at in the whole area of animals, animal welfare and animal rights. When we began to develop the story itself, we came across all kinds of people who had vastly different views of circuses and the use of wild performing animals, and we decided that they all had some kind of relationship that we had to respect, and so we found a range of characters who we decided we were going to treat with respect in the film.
That range that you've just talked about went from talking to trainers of different stripes.
They range from we went there's the Tyke incident, which in, in many ways inspired us to make the film. The Tyke incident, where this elephant killed her trainer in the middle of a performance in front of 2,000 people, ran out into the street, was shot down with 87 bullets in the streets of Kaka'ako here in Honolulu, and made headlines around the world. That was the core story. And the core story was covered by four television stations, by home video, and all of this made us think, well, here is an extraordinary story that is incredibly well documented, and we can tell the story of Tyke's rampage and what happened to her. But we decided we were going to go back further to look at the people who knew Tyke during her lifetime. And those were the former trainers and handlers she had. We attempted to get her former owner, who wouldn't participate in the end. But then, of course, all of the witnesses to the event here. And each one of them had a different relationship to Tyke. The witnesses had one relationship that's indelibly imprinted in all of their memories. The handlers and the trainers who encountered Tyke each had a different story to tell about her and what their relationship with this animal was and what they observed about the way Tyke was treated. And then, of course, there were the people here who participated in the activism and council meetings and attempting to change the laws back then, who had another kind of relationship with Tyke, which is that Tyke became a symbol, really, for the changes around the attempts to change our use of wild performing animals.
Tyler Ralston, I want to bring you into this conversation,
sure.
Mm-hmm. too. Because you were there, mm-hmm. and the relationship that you had, as Stefan has just said, is very different from some mm-hmm. of the other relationships that people had with Tyke. Mm-hmm. Seeing what happened with that, mm-hmm. and then becoming an advocate for the banning of wild performing animals,
mm-hmm.
how do you describe your relationship to all of this, aside from just mm-hmm. advocate? I mean, you're also a clinical psychologist. You know a lot about trauma.
Yeah, witnessing the Tyke rampage, or at least the part that I witnessed, was really deeply bothersome for me, and was really the main thing driving me, wanting to make sure that nobody in Hawaii, that I care about, which is pretty much everyone in Hawaii, that ever had to witness something like this again. And so my relationship, even though I only, sort of quote, knew Tyke during the last, say, 20 minutes of her life, ended up being a relationship with a lot of depth and interest and a lot of emotion on my part for this beautiful animal that was really a symbol of so many other animals and the struggle that they go through in circuses day in and day out all around the world, and particularly in the U.S.
How many circuses still use animals? Inga Gibson, would you know?
Yeah, I mean, there are hundreds of circuses around the world that continue to exploit mm-hmm. these complex wild animals mm-hmm. across, many also across the United States. Although about 46 municipalities have prohibited circuses and other acts involving dangerous wild animals, and about 40 countries have outright banned performances involving wild animals, dozens more states, of course. No other state mm-hmm. has statewide in the U.S. prohibited these dangerous wild animal acts, they continue to perform mm-hmm. across the country. Ringling Brothers, of course, announced
so that it won't after 2018.
Right, that they will be retiring the elephants that they had been using for so many years, that's a very small silver lining in, I think, a lot of the awareness that's been raised in part by this film. But so much more needs to be done. So many animals are suffering, even those that are able to get out of the circus and get out of these exploitive performing acts. Then the question is, where do they go?
Okay, and in the film, you do show a bit of the Pacific Animal Wildlife Sanctuary. And the fact that it's still a big sanctuary, there may be hundreds of acres, but they're still bordered by a fence. it's a bigger playground for them to at least spend, you know, the rest of their days. But still, it comes back to that question of, you know, why do we have to have these animals there in the first place?
It's really a dilemma of our own making, isn't it? I mean, you know, the history of bringing animals into the United States and other countries that use wild performing animals, and we're talking about elephants in particular. What do you do with these animals once they are set to retire? And, you know, when Ringling Brothers phases out the use of their animals, they haven't had successful breeding programs in this country. Most of the animals were brought in. And something has to happen with them. And it's very poignant. I think it is a poignant scene in the film that where Ed Stewart, the head of the Performing Animal Welfare Society Sanctuary in California, says, you know, this may look wonderful to some people, but this is kind of sad for us. This is all we can do. They're not roaming in huge family groups across the savannah. They're sort of, you know, in paddocks in a sanctuary in California, and they're doing an incredible job, as the other sanctuaries are. But they'll never lead a real elephant life.
In family groups, and in part that was shown in the film as well, and in having, you know, talked to others about elephants who say that, you know, these are very social animals in their own family groups, and that not to have that where they're literally chained and made to stand until they go out and perform and then they come back again. The whole issue was with Tyke and Tyke bolting was that for once that she was being an elephant. Mm-hmm. And where everybody looked at that and said, did she go berserk? No, there wasn't any berserk about it from, you know, some of the reports. It's simply that she was doing the only thing she knew how to do, which was run away.
Yeah, and I think when we talk about animal, you know, families, family groupings and that sort of thing, we can really relate to it on a human level. I mean, an animal and elephants probably have more intricate and closer family ties than humans. But we, as another species that brings up and teaches our young, can, you know, appreciate what it must be like for an elephant to be chained up its entire life and not even to be able to socialize with other elephants it likes. Mm-hmm.
I think that's one thing that, you know, that people forget, especially children, when they're taken to the circus. I mean, these are wild animals. It's interesting in talking with some folks, they actually, you know, they would refer to circus animals as if they were a different species, thinking that because they may have been bred or raised in captivity or because they had spent years and years in circuses or roadside zoos, that they were somehow different. I mean, these are wild animals. Again, especially elephants and lions and tigers and bears and a lot of other animals that we've seen right here in Hawaii over the last 20, 30, 50 years. And I think that that's something, you know, really important aside from the highly complex sentient nature of these animals, the highly social nature, the fact that they are not able to engage in even the most basic natural behaviors. We also have to think about the public safety threat that they pose. Again, just acting, you know, in their normal behavior as Tyke was, as we've seen with other wild animals where there have been similar attacks, they are doing what comes naturally, and we are shocked, but we really shouldn't be because, again, they are wild animals, and they deserve our respect, and it's just, you know, it's not a matter of if, but when you're talking about wild performing animals.
Very often people seem to feel that they can control nature, whether it's the weather or where they're going to live or the animals that may be there. And whether it's encroachment in British Columbia where you have a mountain lion that gets stuck in a parking garage or other places where similar things like that have happened, it seems to again illustrate this need to control. Mm-hmm. How do we back off of that after so many decades and hundreds of years of these kinds of you know, entertainment activities like going to the circus or even a zoo? Tyler, is there any movement that you're seeing in people understanding that, you know, wild needs to be wild and you're not going to bring that in and play nice?
Yeah, big time. I think there's really a lot of movement happening around the world and in the U.S. You know, Cirque du Soleil and some of these circuses, for example, that have consenting human performers rather than, you know, captive, non-consenting animal performers is one example. And the support that Cirque du Soleil and the success of Cirque du Soleil and similar circuses has just been huge. And it, that in contrast to like Ringling Brothers and some of the other more traditional circuses that were maybe hip and cool 150 years ago or 100 years ago, you know, the dichotomy or the difference between them is becoming more and more and more apparent as time goes on. So fortunately, things are changing. And as Inga said, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. It seems really also in most people that I talk with or that, you know, I hear from about this issue, seems like everybody's really starting to get it a lot more. And it's really, if somebody is still supporting animals and circuses, every single time I've found that they're either uneducated about the facts and what's happening with it, or they've got some kind of a financial interest in, you know, making money by having the animals in the circus. So it's really the pool of people getting interest or remain, you know, still interested in that kind of a practice is becoming smaller and smaller. And that's a good thing.
I think scientists have had a lot to do with it, too. The animal behaviorists who have made us aware of animal consciousness. In the case of elephants, the people who study them in the wild, Joyce Poole and other very well-known animal behaviorists, who make people aware of these family ties, family groupings, the way had the similarity of elephants to elephant behavior to human behavior. And that's why I think, as Inga was saying, why are we shocked? It's kind of a no-brainer in some ways why Tyke did what she did. She was kept captive and chained up her entire life, was beaten when she didn't perform the silly tricks she was asked to perform, and that was the result. So I think people are conscious of that in probably a way they weren't even 10 years ago. Yeah.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about performing wild animals and whether there should be a ban on them in Hawaii. There has been a movement for that for over 20 years. It looks like it may happen if, in fact, the governor is able to keep his promise, if the Board of Agriculture is able to make some rulemaking changes, and if that's generally accepted by the public. So how do you feel about that? Would you be in favor of a ban on wild performing animals? 941-3689 is our number, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. We want to hear what you have to say about all of this, too. We spend a lot of time talking about animals that are performing, that are held captive, that are chained up. We spend a lot less time talking about some of the same animals in the wild which are being poached because it's so, you know, far away. And in the abstract, it's easy to talk about that. Inga, we've talked in past about movements to stop the ivory trade in Hawaii and talking about how many animals are killed daily.
Yes.
Is it still like 76 animals a day?
96 elephants right now. Poaching is absolutely at crisis levels. 100,000 African elephants were killed in 2012 alone. As you mentioned, estimate about 96 elephants per day. At the current rate of poaching, they are going to be extinct within our lifetime, within the next 10 years or 20 years. In addition to rhinos, we've already lost 5 species of rhinos just in the last few years. Many of your listeners are probably familiar with Cecil the lion. Lions are also endangered. Poaching is also funding a lot of these criminal terrorist activities, the Lord's Resistance Army, a lot of the criminal syndicates that we hear about, Al-Shabaab and others, that are bringing all kinds of violence, not just to the animals, of course, but they're, you know, of course, being killed, poached for their ivory. And that is driving the poaching and potential extinction of these animals. And Hawaii, contrary to a lot of folks, is actually the top third ivory market in the nation, only behind California and New York. Last month, Governor Jerry Brown in California signed a bill prohibiting the sale of ivory and rhino horn. And last year, New York and New Jersey, and we'll be at it again because we need to save these magnificent species. We all have a role to play in ending their exploitation, whether it's to be used in performing acts or just to save their populations from potential extinction.
Yeah, the bottom line is being used for the pleasure of humans in in whatever way, whether it's ivory or whether it's going to see the circus.
Exactly.
If you want to join the conversation, the phone lines are open, 941-3689. If you're on Oahu, 941-3689. Or from the neighbor islands, or if you're listening to the live stream, 877-941-3689. Going to Mendita, calling from Honolulu. Aloha, thank you for your patience.
Hi, thank you. I'm calling to say very clearly my support for a complete ban on performing animals. I think that from a sociological perspective, it's important for us to remember the history of oppression, yeah, and even slavery. There's been numerous studies that have shown that the acceptance of a treatment of animals in this kind of utilitarian way, that they're only there for our pleasure or our needs, is actually at the root of also, you know, a lot of mistreatment of our fellow human beings. So I think that I'm absolutely stunned anytime I see even a pet shop, never mind a performing animal, and I would love to see a ban in Hawaii.
Mendita, thank you so much for calling us. Good to hear from you. Going now to Peter from Kaka'ako. Aloha, Peter. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi.
Hi there.
I just want to let you know that Tyke went nuts that time, even though he's gone and walking before and gotten out, because someone had given him green Placidils, feeding them like peanuts to the poor thing for the show, and that's when he lost his mind and went crazy because he was high.
Okay. I don't know if there's anyone around our table who might be able to substantiate.
This is not public information. I know this because I was told by a person, the person, and they've regretted it ever since and lost a good friend, and trust me, that's what happened.
All right. Thank you very much, Peter, for the call. That story, obviously, you can't substantiate, Stefan, in what you were able to find out about.
I'm not aware of it, actually. The gentleman says he has a reliable source for that information. It's entirely possible, but I am, frankly, not aware of it.
Yeah, unfortunately, that really wouldn't surprise me. I mean, we've heard cases of roadside exhibitors and substandard zoos and others providing their own treatment to animals, sedatives and other to try, you know, in order to take photos with the baby bears and take photos with the cubs and the baby lions. So it's shocking, but it's not unheard of that some may try to medicate, if you want to call it medicate, these animals to attempt to control them, and there could be some adverse reactions. So I don't know specifically about the Tyke case, but we've heard about it absolutely in other wild animal exhibits.
And there
there's also
no...
been...
Oh, go ahead.
Well, there's also been cases of just extreme cruelty where elephants have been given lit cigarettes to, you know, to eat and that sort of thing. And I think one of the... I can't remember whether it was Topsy or one of the famous elephants that was killed. Topsy was electrocuted. Yeah, had that history behind her. So
that was actually for public display to see what it would be like to electrocute an elephant.
The famous Topsy case in the early part of the 20th century, where Topsy the elephant was actually electrocuted by using. Thomas Edison actually used direct current to show that the alternate current was safer, and he used Topsy as, you know, an experiment. And but she, the reason she was up for electrocution is because she misbehaved. I can't remember whether she hurt or killed a trainer, but her history was being fed lit cigarettes.
You know, can I ask you one more question?
Sure.
Before we go away from Peter's call? Were there any toxicology reports?
That is a good question. I know there was a toxicology report on the Alan Campbell, who was the trainer, and if I recall correctly, there was maybe some substances that were not usually found in a human system, found in his system. But that was, you know, I gleaned that from the newspaper. So
no, there were no toxicology reports on Tyke.
Yeah, you know, I just wanted to add to that that even when animals are not fed cigarettes and things like this, again, like Inga was saying, they're wild animals, and they're gonna be wild animals. It was just a couple days ago that two zebras escaped from a circus in the mainland and ran through traffic and had to be chased down, and there weren't any car accidents. But and fortunately, that was a bit of a safer incident in the way that it was handled. But it's very easy for a tiger to just jump out of a ring and grab a kid and drag it out to the parking lot, and you know, that wouldn't be a good situation. So these things happen all the time, even if they're not fed you know, human plastic things and drugs and stuff.
If you'd like to join us, our phone number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. We're remembering Tyke the elephant and what that means for advocates as they go forward to create a ban on performing wild animals. Been at it for 20 years, looking to sometime soon where that might happen, given Governor Ige's pledge about 6 months ago. We want to hear what you have to say about that. Are you in favor of a ban on wild performing animals? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Victoria from Kaimuki. Aloha, Victoria. Thank you for
Hello.
Your patience. Hi there.
Hi. Thank you so much for this important show. There should absolutely be a ban on performing wild animals everywhere. Inga just said that we have, all of us, a role to play in stopping the abuse and poaching of these magnificent creatures. And I just want to put in another aspect, working elephants in Southeast Asia, India, Thailand. Whenever we go on vacation, some people ride elephants. These elephants are also working elephants. They're treated as livestock. They have absolutely no legal status at all, protections. And so we, when we go on vacation, we need to think about the captive lives population of elephants, and not ride them, but visit sanctuaries that house them.
All right. Thanks very much, Victoria, for the call. We appreciate
it.
Thank you. You know, hearing some of this, it's also bringing up some slippery slopes here for some people thinking, okay, you know, what about cows? I mean, we had that incident where we had a cow that was on the freeway, and that cow was killed. We've had other incidents where other animals have escaped in different places. You talked about the zebras a moment ago, Tyler. What point do you draw the line? I know with the circus animals, you're talking about bears and lions and tigers and, you know, elephants, surely. And those aren't the same thing, for example, as the horses that are also there. And is someone who is going to be an animal trainer working only with elephants? What about the animal trainers that work with the horses? I mean, there gets to be a point where you say, okay, are these people okay and these are not? Or should it be totally without animals?
Oh, well, yeah, and I remember vividly the case on the West Side, of course, the tragic case involving the cow that had got onto the road and unfortunately ended up being being killed by police. And we had, you know, of course, immediately offered training to the to HPD, as we have to other law enforcement agencies when we've seen similar cases. Any large animal, of course, could be potentially dangerous, whether it's a horse that gets spooked or a calf that, you know, cow that gets out on the roadway. But we're talking about domesticated animals. We're talking about animals that have lived with and among humans for many, many years versus wild animals. That I think the most important thing is wild animals are unpredictable. domesticated animals are, because of their relationships with humans, because of their years of domestication, are much more predictable. Absolutely, all law enforcement agencies need to work with their local animal control, animal shelters, when there are animal emergencies, so that they can respond appropriately. Right now, the majority of law enforcement does not have the skills to handle domesticated animal issues, let alone wild animal issues. One of the points that we brought up in petitioning the Department of Agriculture for the need for this rule was that right now, you know, we don't have veterinarians that are specialized in wild animal issues. Some of these African wild animals, of course, that aren't, you know, obviously native to Hawaii. We also don't have law enforcement that is equipped with how to handle escapes. Even our local humane societies, who have dedicated their lives and training, supplies, skills, resources for responding, they don't have the ability. And I think that's a key consideration. And I think that's really what the governor and our Department of Agriculture took into consideration when they supported this initiative.
All right, we're going to take a few more callers. Going now to Peter, calling from Wahiawa. Aloha, Peter. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can, yes.
Oh, you know, I'm 63 years old. I remember as a child reading about poaching elephants in Africa. And here we are, and 63, and it's still going on. It's amazing. I used to think that maybe United Nations would do something about it. And there's a lot of these organizations that are trying to prevent poaching and hunting wild animals to be trained and in circus. But it just keeps going on and on. Nothing seems to be, it's not being stopped. It's just, it's bizarre. I'm really, you know, by the time I'm dead, it's still going to be going on.
Well, so, the people around this table are hoping not. So let me get some answers for you, Peter. I mean, he's saying that this has been going on for such a long time, and his big fear is it's going to continue. But hearing from what you have said a little earlier in the program, maybe some momentum shifting in certain parts of the story. Maybe not necessarily all having to do with elephants in the wild or other animals like gorillas that are poached for their parts, but looking at how at least some of these conversations that we're having about animals that are contained within zoos is leading to a greater conversation about what's happening with those same animals worldwide.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. We are moving forward with compassion and knowledge. We are moving forward, and that is thankfully the way that the United States and other parts of the world are going. We've started to refer to it kind of as the blackfish effect. And Tyke, I think, Tyke Elephant Outfall.
You're talking about the movie Blackfish.
Right, but it really is kind of the equivalent of the elephant, you know, a wild animal equivalent of blackfish, where it's raising this tremendous public awareness. And with that, we're finally seeing some policy reforms that we have not seen in some years. Again, regarding ivory sales in the U.S., which is the second largest retailer, you know, we have New York, New Jersey, California. Last week, we passed an initiative prohibiting the sale and trade of 10 endangered species, which includes lions and leopards and pangolins and rhinos and elephants. Of course, you know, we're hoping Hawaii will become the fifth state. Again, we've got these 46 municipalities that have already enacted some legislation related to circus animals. Just a few days ago, Clark County in Las Vegas finally started to prohibit some of the possession of these dangerous wild animals as pets, which is a whole other tremendous public safety issue. So things are moving forward, but we really need people to keep the pressure on their policymakers and their legislators to see this through. We'll see it through, but we need everyone's support.
That part of it, and also the fact that the federal act that would prohibit circus animals is still dead. I mean, it was introduced, what, last year? Didn't go anywhere in the last Congress and hasn't been reintroduced again.
Exactly. Unfortunately, it has not, like you said, come back up in Congress. But we know Congress sometimes takes a bit of time in action. So we're hopeful that that's where the states can step in. I mean, this issue is definitely the kuleana of the Department of Agriculture. They are the state entity that is issuing permits for these wild animal acts. They are the entity that has continued to allow a number of these acts to be held here in Hawaii over the last 21 years since Tyke's death.
All right, let's see what some more of our callers have to say. I'm going to go to Jake calling from Palisades. Aloha, Jake. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi, how's it? I was curious, earlier you guys kind of were talking a little bit about the poaching going on and the rhinos and stuff like that. And a lot of the documentaries and stuff I've seen pretty much were saying that the reason behind a lot of that was Chinese medicine stuff. And I was just kind of curious if there's been anything to kind of interrupt that flow. Because from what I understand, the people doing the poaching aren't really getting paid very much money. It's the middlemen and then the final people who are buying it, and a lot of them in mainland China. And I was just wondering if you guys had any kind of like any knowledge of if, you know, substantiating that, or if there's anything being done to interrupt those trade routes.
Good
where
question,
Jake. Animals are being poached for.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit, because what he's bringing up is the issue of demand for these animals, for their parts, for use, for ornamentation, for jewelry, for whatever it may be that makes them valuable. And if you could undercut the demand of all that, well, then no one would want to be able to go out and do it, because there'd be no value to
exactly. it. Exactly. And that's exactly what we're trying to do. It is anytime there's a legal sale in the part or product of an animal, that's going to drive the continued killing. Hawaii was the first state in the nation back in 2010. We passed a law prohibiting the possession or sale of shark fins. And we've seen a significant decrease in the number of sharks actually captured and killed for fins. In 2012 here in Hawaii, we prohibited the sale of bear parts, the bear gallbladder.
Which goes to the question that Jake
exactly.
was bringing up.
Both bear gallbladder, bear bile, and rhino horn are believed to have these medicinal aphrodisiac purposes, which is completely false, completely unfounded. And like shark fin soup, I mean, these sharks, 70 million a year were being slaughtered because there was a preference for the soup that was, again, not being consumed as a staple by the average person, but being served to the elite at $100, $200 a bowl. With ivory, you know, we're talking about dead elephants dying for trinkets, for jewelry, for little statues, for figurines. Rhino horn is carved into cups so that elixirs can be drank from them. So there's a lot of misinformation about the purpose of these products.
But Inga, I mean, going back to Jake's question, knowing that, and that may be a very American or Western perspective, but looking at where that demand is, how are you making the leap? Is there any inroad being made in China,
Absolutely.
In Korea, and other places that have been valuing some of these animals for just the reasons that you
Absolutely.
Talked about?
Absolutely. Our international arm, Humane Society International, is actively working on campaigns in Vietnam, where the pangolin trade, pangolin is the most trafficked animal in the world. It's also known as the, it's similar to an anteater. A lot of folks aren't familiar with that product. And we're working in parts of Africa and South Africa, throughout Asia. We have active campaigns in Hong Kong and China, around the world, educating consumers that these animals are at risk. They're at risk of extinction, and that the products do not have the value that some may think. They do not have the medicinal value that some may think. So, you know, education, outreach, community involvement is completely, you know, key to these efforts.
Am I wrong that China is actually taking some initiative as far as ivory is concerned recently?
Yes, recently when the president of China was here meeting with President Obama, there were announcements made cooperatively to really crack down on the trade. I mean, China is the largest market for ivory, and so they have a tremendous role. That's where all the carving factories are. But we need a stronger commitment from all of these countries and all of the states also.
We're going to go back to some of our callers now. If you'd like to join us, the phone lines are open, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. We're talking about banning performing animals, wild animals, from things like a circus, and using the story of Tyke the elephant from 20 years ago, tragic story, as a jumping off point to see what's happened in the last 20 years, and is all that work that happened then after her death going to come to fruition anytime soon, and would you be in favor of that? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Dave from Kauai. Aloha, Dave. Thank you for your patience.
Hi, thanks for having my call. Yes, I wanted to just go back briefly to an earlier topic that came up about the increasing awareness of humans in general through the plight of animals that may be considered abused or mistreated for profit or pleasure. And if we could extend that a little bit to animals that are raised for meat and dairy and kept in captivity, so to speak, in factory farm conditions, that might also be worth considering and could tie back to one of your earlier callers, Mindy, I believe it was, who mentioned that mistreatment of animals could be a causal factor in people mistreating one another, and we could extend that into the factory farm support that we have with our daily food choices. But the nice thing about that is because we do have the choice, you know, we could actually make an improvement in that situation just with our daily choices as we become more aware of the plight of these animals.
All right, Dave, I want to get Tyler to answer you. A couple of things that he's brought up, and again, this is kind of moving us down a different path, and some people would say a very slippery slope in terms of saying, you know, you should eat this, and this is why, and you can't have that, and this is why, as opposed to having, you know, people have greater understanding that just may emanate from their own understandings and studies of all of this. But the relationship of people to animal, that's at the very base of everything that we've talked about, for performance, for food value, for pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's he brings up a really good point about all this, and clearly they're related. You know, even if we look at the psychological or psychiatric diagnosis of antisocial personality disorder, we know that people have antisocial personality disorder, which is really going to lead somebody to do a lot of criminal behavior, and is largely characterized by the lack of empathy and a lack of guilt. And we know that people early who have antisocial personality disorder early on in their histories, as youngsters, they were growing up and stuff. You know, there's other variables that go into this, but one of them that they end up doing is mistreating animals. And we know that when people can, from an early age, learn to treat animals with compassion and respect, they grow up into people that will continue to treat animals with compassion and respect, but also adult, you know, human beings with compassion and respect. I think some of you might be familiar with the Mahatma Gandhi's fairly famous quote, yeah, that the greatness of a nation can be judged by its the greatness of a nation and its moral progress can be judged by the way it treats its animals. And they really are related. It's you know, even like Ingo was talking about some of the education and stuff. You know, circuses might have been relevant 100 years ago in what they teach kids and sort of, you know, the silly entertainment value. But these days, it's teaching kids from an early age that it's okay to do this kind of thing, to treat animals this way. And then that then translates into it's okay to kill elephants to make ivory trinkets, and it just kind of grows from there. So it's really all interconnected and related, and particularly given internet and TV and things these days where we have great coverage. You know, in the savannah and stuff, it's really unnecessary to have circus animals doing what circus animals have done traditionally.
That you're just listening to Tyler Ralston, who was there as one of the witnesses when Tyke was shot, and he's a clinical psychologist. And thanks very much, Dave, for bringing that up. Going now to Cassandra, calling us from Chinatown. Aloha, Cassandra, and thanks very much for your patience, too.
Okay, am I on?
You are.
Okay, this is kind of a different spin to it, but after the last caller, it will be easy. I was in Seattle in the 70s, and there was a circus, I believe, and as I was leaving early, and it was sparse leaving, I looked at the three or four elephants that were tied and within a rope, so you could kind of pass by them, and I looked at the elephants, and I chose this one to kind of observe and kind of look, make eye contact. And pretty soon the trainer came out and gave each one of them 3 carrots. And so I watched the elephant eat 1 carrot and start on another, and I said, oh, you've got 1 left. May I have it? In my mind. Nothing but my mind. And the carrot and the elephant grabbed that carrot and backed off, and I said, oh, my God, you read my mind. I love you. It's so neat. Are you happy here? And the elephant kind of came back and handed me the carrot.
Well, that was a really good experience for you, Cassandra, and I'm glad at least that the elephants that were there at least weren't being mistreated, at least within the time that you were able to view them. Going now to Ryan calling us from Kaneohe. Aloha, Ryan. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi. I'm in general not a fan of zoos and whatnot, just because they're kind of depressing, and performance animals I don't really think are a good idea. But on the other side, that's me as an adult. Growing up, I was greatly influenced by being able to go to a zoo and see animals firsthand, because as good as TV and internet and all that kind of stuff is, it's fundamentally different from the effects of actually seeing animals in person. And so I'm just kind of wondering about people, the panel's opinions on possible alternatives to, like, SeaWorld and that kind of thing that could actually get kids in front of animals in a way that's less damaging to the animals in general. Because it's just, like, there's not no value to having those animals in front of people. And I don't think that as good as technology has gotten, it's quite there yet.
All right, you bring up a lot of good points, Ryan. Thanks very much for hanging in there so we could talk to you. He's talking about zoos and other ways that you have those firsthand experiences, even though there may be a wall between you, even though there may be bars between you. Looking at an animal and looking into its eyes and watching it is very different from when you're watching something on a screen. Is there any way that any of you can see where that kind of, you know, firsthand or authentic experience can happen without damage to an animal and with children who may never see these animals except for any other way able to experience those animals? Inga?
Absolutely, it's great that the caller brought that up, because that is actually one of the things that I do hear from folks who, as children grew up going to the zoo and seeing these animals and learning about these animals. Of course, the best way to see wild animals is in the wild. There is no question. You don't want to see them necessarily face to face in the wild if there's a danger. But thank goodness, you know, throughout Africa, there are these amazing eco lodges and safaris that you can go on where you can.
Right. But for most families, that's going to be kind of pricey.
Oh, sure.
Maybe they're not going to have the time to do that. They may plop down and watch nature or other things to be
right.
able to give them that kind of experience.
Right.
But not necessarily going and saying, there's the lion. Look at that lion.
Right. No. And again, if you're not able to see them in their natural habitat in the wild, which is a major financial constraint, of course, visiting animals in sanctuaries, learning about animals on the internet, as was mentioned earlier, National Geographic and other Discovery Channel and others have done a tremendous job of really educating people about wild animals.
Right, but he's getting back to the point about the zoo thing. And,
right.
and I want us all to kind of look at that, because a lot of people have very mixed feelings when it comes to a zoo, that they're there for, again, our pleasure, for learning and educational purposes, all told, but they're still captive, and those pens aren't very often that huge anyway. Is that fair to the animal? Is that right to do if you're going to say, you're not going to have them in circuses? Should you have them in zoos?
I'd say he definitely brings up a good point, and I'd like to just add on what Inga was saying, that there's a variety of ways, I think, to get around that, and one of them is also just having animals that might not survive in the wild because they've been injured. You know, I've been to several sanctuaries and rehabilitation centers myself in various places where, you know, there's a one-winged eagle because it has flown into a power line and it's fried its wing off and it's never going to fly again. And they can, you know, be in some kind of a sanctuary rehabilitation center, or a cougar that has lost its teeth in an accident and is not able to hunt on its own. And so there's things like this that can be another alternative to being able to learn about animals. And I think what the caller might have in part been saying is to early on learn the appreciation of animals. And even then, it seems like it'd be most appropriate to have it be as wild and as free as possible, not only for the animal, of course, but just because it's educating young people accurately about it.
I mean, you're kind of dancing around this whole thing about the zoo, because that's what a lot of people are feeling in their hearts, is that, you know, I saw the animals when I was a kid at the zoo. It was my first touch with an animal. loved it, it was great, or whatever it might have been, but it was at a zoo. And that brings back to the issue, the same question that we've had about circus animals and other places where animals are contained. Is the zoo an appropriate activity anymore?
Well, if I may, as part of the proposal that's going to be considered by the Board of Agriculture, this in no way affects the Honolulu Zoo, which is an accredited institution. Our organization's position, of course, is that zoos should be a place focused on conservation, bona fide conservation and education efforts. And the best standard right now is accreditation through the American Zoological Association, which, again, the Honolulu Zoo is accredited. We have another zoo on the Big Island, the Paniva Zoo, that is not accredited, that we have some serious concerns with. But I think zoos are going to be around, and they serve many purposes. I think the most important thing is to ensure that they're accredited, because you know that the animals that are kept in those facilities are adhering to the highest national standards of care. They have veterinarians on staff. They only acquire animals from other legitimate sources. They're not acquiring these animals from backyard breeders or roadside zoos. Obviously, there are parts of the country that people can still keep these animals as pets.
And so, they do here.
Well, actually, we here in Hawaii, we have some of the strongest laws prohibiting private possession of wild animals as pets.
And, well, of wild animals, true. Right. But in terms of zoos, there are, you know, small-time petting zoos where you've got little, you know, ponies and goats and maybe a turkey or, you know, things like that. And that's not necessarily where you're going with this legislation.
Not at all. Not at all. This specifically pertains to dangerous wild animals. Again, animals that have complex needs that present a tremendous public health and safety risk to the community, those whose environments cannot be replicated.
Let's take a couple more callers. A lot of people want to talk to you. Wiley calling us from Kamuela. Aloha, Wiley. Thanks for your patience. Welcome to Town Square.
Yeah, thank you. I just want to follow up comment. Your previous caller talked about Chinese medicine. I had a personal experience with a practitioner on this island about 3 years ago, and I was told by this practitioner with a straight face that powdered ivory cures leukemia. And, of course, I was shocked. And then, so I think the Chinese medicine industry has to start policing and educating their practitioners. So that's my comment. Thank you.
All right, Wiley. Thanks. Thanks very much. And we're not going to get too deeply into that part now, because that could be a whole other conversation, and maybe we have to have that one again, too. We probably will. Going now to Roland calling us from Aiea. Aloha, Roland. Welcome to Town Square.
Oh, hi. Thank you. Yes, I was just wanting to see if I could chime in, and I went to Mexico one time, and they had this, you know what a nurse shark is, but they had this nurse shark pin, and, you know, they allowed people to get in there and wrestle with it, so it was a good-sized shark, maybe about 6 to 7 feet, but their idea was, you know, they would catch these things, and then after a year, they let them go. So I was just wondering, you know, like, on some cases, I've known people from Laos, and they said they have pet elephants. But, you know, maybe if they, like, let them go after a year or something, they could bring more goodwill between the animals and the humans.
All right, Roland, let's take that up. Is there really any sense of transmission of relationship from animal to human if you let an animal go that you've had in captivity for a little while? And obviously, you're not necessarily animal behaviorist in any of that, but goes back to your point in the earlier part of the show, Inga, that not doing the elephant rides, not visiting places that have these roadside family operations to do it, sends a very clear message.
Right, and that's, again, a challenge, because if these animals are bred and raised in captivity, although they're wild and unpredictable, they don't have very many options for release. I mean, we have Dolphin Quest and Sea Life Park here that have Swim with the Dolphin programs. Those animals, you know, cannot you know, be released into the wild.
They can't fend for themselves.
Exactly. They have become, we have crippled them. We have made them dependent upon humans. And because of that, their lives are forever in our hands. And this is why, recently announced by SeaWorld, stopping breeding of these wild animals, marine mammals included, is so critical. Otherwise, these animals will be held in captivity in perpetuity.
All right, we're going to take one more caller. Amy calling us from Waikiki. Aloha,
Hi,
Amy.
Batman. Thank you so much for doing this show. I just wanted to say that I have no experience with wild animals and performing, but I've been doing, for 15 years, performances at libraries and festivals involving dancing dogs with an educational aspect, which is how to be a dog's best friend. And my concern is that this type of legislation could migrate from wild animal performances to domestic. And I've seen the benefits within the audience. They're able to interact, and there are so many children that have been able to come up after the performance to pet the dogs who, I can tell, have not been acclimated to dogs in any way, shape, or form. And that poses a risk. If I can educate them a little bit, I just I see these animal performances as having a tremendous benefit, not only for
all right,
the
Amy,
audience,
Amy,
but
for,
also
forgive
the
me for interrupting you, but I want to be able to get some clarity here from Inga, because very clearly you're not talking about these domesticated animals. You're not talking about shutting it down. She's worried,
right.
And a lot of people are for lots of reasons, whether it would be, you know, a small little zoo that a family may have, or a petting zoo kind of thing, or Amy and her dancing dogs trying to do some therapy with kids that
right.
may or may not, you know, have this, a good experience
yeah,
with dogs.
The proposed rule changes would not impact domesticated animals. Thank you, Amy, actually, for working with dogs and their incredible companions and sharing them with the children in our community. Domesticated animals, again, are quite different. I mean, we support dogs as therapy animals. Obviously, they are our canine companions in working dogs in the military, with police, with our veterans. This would in no way impact any kind of a continued interaction, which we, again, I mean, not just not impact it, we support increasing the human-animal bond with domesticated animals. And that's why we don't object, nor does this legislation relate to petting zoos or donkeys or other equine species. We want to encourage the bond where it's appropriate with domesticated animals.
Yeah, that's the operative word, domesticated animals,
yes.
Wild animals. And you have lists, all of that is pretty easily available when
yes.
you go onto the website, and you can see that. We've got a couple minutes before we have to say goodbye. As Stefan, we started with you, I want to talk to you a little bit before you go. You've been showing Tyke since about February, March. As you've been moving across the country, what has been the response to the film in terms of some of the legislation that Inga and Tyler have been talking about? Has it really become sort of the poster child for the movement?
Well, I think in some ways it has. I mean, Tyke Elephant Outlaw has been called the blackfish for elephants in a number of reviews it's received, and we're very happy about that. I mean, we're happy about being associated with another terrific film that's made a huge difference for in that case, killer whales, orcas, and we are thrilled about Tyke having that association. I think it has made a big difference.
Well, we wish you all the best with the film as you show it at HIF this weekend. Stefan Moore, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And to Tyler Ralston and to Inga Gibson, thank you very much for being with us tonight, and to all of our callers, and our apologies to the ones that we couldn't get to. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. I'll see you tomorrow morning for the conversation right here at 8 o'clock. Meanwhile, have yourselves a good evening. Aloha.